John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drop?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to This Week in Palestine, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, October 6 to 12, 2012. The Palestinian Authority is concerned about frequent Israeli settlers' attempts to storm the Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem. Meanwhile, Israeli military conducts 46 military incursions into Palestinian communities. These stories and more are coming up. Stay tuned. Let's begin our weekly report with the non-violent activities organized in West Bank. On Friday, Israeli troops violently oppressed anti-war protests across the West Bank. As a result, 3 civilians were injured and many more were treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation. IMEMC's Ghassan Banoura has more.
This week, anti-war protests were reported in central West Bank villages of Bel'in, Na'lin, and Nabi Saleh, and in the southern West Bank village of Al-Ma'sara near Bethlehem City. 2 young men were injured, one in the back and one in the leg, when troops fired rubber-coated steel bullets at Nabi Saleh villagers and their supporters. Protesters marched on Friday in solidarity with the Palestinian political prisoners and farmers who are under constant attacks by settlers. Soldiers stopped the march at the village entrance of Nabi Saleh and fired rubber-coated steel bullets as well as tear gas and chemical water at protesters, injuring the 2 men. Later, troops invaded the village and fired tear gas at residents' homes. Many, mostly children, suffered effects of tear gas inhalation. At the nearby village of Na'lin, soldiers attacked the protesters as soon as they reached the annexation wall with tear gas. The protest ended with clashes between local youth and troops. 4 civilians were slightly injured due to the soldiers' attacks, among them one German man. In the nearby Bel'in village, many were treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation. This week, villagers and their international and Israeli supporters reached the wall before Israeli soldiers attacked them with tear gas. Elsewhere in southern West Bank, at the village entrance of Al-Ma'sara, Israeli troops forced anti-war protesters back into the village using rifle butts and batons. No injuries were reported. For IMEMC News, this is Ghassan Banoura.
Now This week, Israel escalated its attacks on the Gaza Strip by aerial and land bombardment. As a result, one man was killed, and a total of 14 civilians were wounded, including 6 children. Meanwhile, in the West Bank, Israeli forces conducted at least 46 military incursions into Palestinian communities. During these incursions, Israeli troops arrested at least 8 Palestinians, including the wife of a Palestinian prisoner. I am EMC's Salam Komsiya with the details.
A Palestinian man was pronounced dead on Monday evening due to Israeli shelling, which targeted Rafah City, southern Gaza Strip, last night. 10 civilians were wounded on Sunday evening when the Israeli Air Force fired several missiles into Rafah. Some of the wounded residents sustained serious injuries. An infant is among the wounded. Also on Monday, 5 civilians were wounded in an Israeli tank shelling, which targeted the town of Khan Yunis, southern Gaza Strip. Later in the week, Israeli gunboats positioned off Al-Waha Resort, northwest of Beit Lahia, opened fire on Wednesday at the Palestinian fishing boats. Damage was reported, but no injuries. From its part, Egyptian leadership this week contacted the Israeli side and informed the government of Benjamin Netanyahu that Egypt is completely against an Israeli military offensive against Gaza, and held Netanyahu personally responsible for further escalation. Egypt also contacted armed resistance groups in Gaza, demanding them to be committed to a truce with Israel in order to prevent Tel Aviv from dragging the entire region into war. In the West Bank this week, settlers escalated their attacks against Palestinian farmers who started this week the olive harvest season. On Monday, a Palestinian young man was injured when Israeli settler opened fire at him near the southern West Bank city of Beit Lahem. A Palestinian child suffered moderate wounds on Thursday when he was rammed by a settler's vehicle near the Ibrahimi Mosque in the old city of Hebron, southern West Bank, while 2 Palestinians were injured on Wednesday evening after being attacked by several extremist Israeli settlers in Burin village, near the northern West Bank city of Nablus. The settlers attacked several Palestinians, including women, who were harvesting their olive trees in the village. Since the start of this week, settlers managed to cut off around 450 olive trees in different parts of the West Bank, local sources reported. Settlers uprooted around 300 olive trees that belonged to residents of Al-Mughir village, east of the central West Bank city of Ramallah. The settlers carried their attack out during the early dawn hours and fled the scene, local sources reported. Another 150 trees were cut off by settlers in southern West Bank. For IMEMC News, this is Salam Khamsi.
Palestinian Authority voiced out concern over repeated attempts by Israeli settlers to storm the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in East Jerusalem. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu dissolved the cabinet and announced an early elections of the parliament. The details and more with IMEMC's Rami Al-Maghari.
PA officials voiced out concern over Israel settlers' attempts to storm the Al-Aqsa Mosque of Jerusalem. The attempts have been repeatedly reported over the past few weeks. Some believe that such attempts are meant to threaten the existence of the mosque and rebuild the Temple Mount, said to be a Jewish legacy. On a similar note, agricultural officials in the PA pledged to fight back Israeli settlers' attempts to uproot olive trees in the West Bank by planting 1,000 olive trees in replacement of any uprooted tree. Such concerns were reported amidst this year's olive trees picking season in the occupied Palestinian territories. On another issue, some Palestinian political leaders, including Fatah MP Mohammed Dahalan and political leader for the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine, Qais Abdul Karim, considered the latest remarks by resigned political leader of Hamas Khaled Mash'al as a proof to Hamas's failure in running the Gaza Strip unilaterally following the division between Hamas and Fatah back in 2007. Recently, Hamas's political leader Khaled Mash'al resigned from his post, and elections within the Islamist Party are to be held soon to select a new leader. Mash'al has lived in exile for decades. At the Israeli level, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu dissolved his government coalition and called for early elections. The decision came after Netanyahu's government failed to produce physical plans. Israeli parties engaged this week in election campaigning for a period of 6 months, in which Netanyahu will remain in post as a caretaker. For IMEMC News, I am Rami Al-Mirari in Gaza.
And that's all for today from This Week in Palestine. This was the weekly report for October 6 to 12, 2012 from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hussein Kassif and me, George Rishmawi.
On the 7th of October, a boat departed from Naples, Italy, in the latest attempt to break the Israeli siege of occupied Gaza by sea. You may remember the incident in 2010 when Israeli commandos boarded the Mavi Mara, a Turkish aid ship to Gaza, at sea in international waters and killed many activists on board in a flagrant violation of international law. That act of maritime piracy had exactly zero effect as a deterrent. A major fleet tried to break the blockade last year. Two ships got through after Israel's attempt to barricade them in European ports. This time around, there are Israeli peace activists aboard, as well as activists from seven other countries, as the latest aid ship to Gaza is on their way from Naples, Italy.
Rachel Corey, a 23-year-old student from Olympia, Washington, was crushed to death by a bulldozer on March 16, 2003, as she stood in nonviolent civil disobedience with activists from the International Solidarity Movement wearing a neon vest trying to protect a Palestinian family's home in the Gaza Strip against demolition. In late August, an Israeli judge ruled that Israel's military was not responsible for Corey's death. Her family had brought a civil suit seeking a symbolic $1 in damages and legal expenses after no action was taken against the military driver of the bulldozer by the Israeli government. The family had previously lost a civil suit in U.S. courts against Caterpillar, the manufacturer of the specially equipped bulldozer. The memory of Rachel Corey and her courageous activism is revered around the world. Her parents, Craig and Cindy Corey, addressed hundreds of people who gathered on October 6th and 7th in New York City for the 4th Bertrand Russell Tribunal on Palestine. At the tribunal, the Coreys announced they were flying to Reykjavik, Iceland on October 7th to accept the Ono Lenin Peace Prize on Rachel's behalf. She was one of five winners of the prize that included John Perkins, Lady Gaga, the late Christopher Hitchens, and the Russian punk music group Pussy Riot. The prize money will go to the Rachel Corey Foundation for Peace and Justice, founded by her family after her death. Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhus spoke with Rachel's mother, Cindy Corey, just before she addressed the New York Tribunal. Here she discusses her family's ongoing efforts for justice in Rachel's case, as well as their promotion of human rights in Palestine and around the world.
In terms of gaining accountability and really truth about what happened to Rachel and justice, ultimately, we filed a civil lawsuit in Israel. That was because the position of the U.S. government was that the investigation into what happened to her by the Israeli military was not thorough, credible, and transparent. But the U.S. was not taking further position, said that they couldn't. So we felt we needed to take that step. It's been a very long process. We're starting into our 10th year of dealing with this, and with the lawsuit in Israel, oral testimony began in 2010 in March. It ended in July 2011, and we've just had the verdict in the case. It was in Haifa District Court, and on the 28th of August, we were in court. Judge Oded Gershon gave the verdict. There's only one judge, there's not a jury. And he found against us. He found that what happened to Rachel was an act occurring during war. And according to that, he stated that the military was therefore not responsible for what happened. Those aren't the legal words, but that's the gist of it. And of course, that's very concerning because it impacts all civilians whenever there's a conflict taking place there. He had other things to say. He thought the investigation was made entirely appropriately, and we definitely disagree with his judgment on that. Also, that the military behaved completely well on the day that Rachel was killed, and we have a lot of concerns about that as well. So that was the outcome. I think from our family's perspective, the decision was such a bad one and it's such a disappointing one. It was an upsetting day for us, of course, but not totally unexpected. But I think it's provided another window into what's happening with institutions inside Israel. This is one judge. I don't know what might have happened before another, but I know that Israeli human rights organizations have raised a lot of concerns about the courts and how the courts also stand with the military, and that it contributes actually to the impunity that the military enjoys. And we still feel that there was a promise made from the Israeli government, from Ariel Sharon, to President Bush, that there would be a thorough, credible, and transparent investigation into the case. And that's a diplomatic promise that has yet to be fulfilled. We have met with high-level officials in the U.S. government at the embassy and so forth. And we have some assurance that the U.S. will be looking at this decision. And I think our expectation is that that has to happen in the same way that human rights organizations are looking at these decisions and how the courts function there. I think it also has to happen here in the U.S. because we're, of course, providing the funding for so much of this to continue.
When you said the judge ruled that because it was an incident that happened during war, that was 2003, March of 2003. I'm not aware that Israel, did they just put everything under a state of war? Because I didn't think there was actually necessarily a state of war at the time.
I can't speak for the Israeli military and how and Israeli state's attorneys and how they try to characterize what was happening there. But I think there are very real questions about whether you can actually have a state of war with a people that you're occupying, the West Bank and Gaza. One thing that happened with this lawsuit that I will add is that for a while it was stopped because there was a law passed in the Knesset that said if something happened in an area of conflict, that nobody could bring a lawsuit from anything that happened there. And they could determine where the area of conflict was, whether it was, and of course it would be the West Bank and Gaza, probably East Jerusalem, but it could be off anywhere. And that decision was eventually overturned, or pieces of it, by the Israeli Supreme Court, which is what allowed our case to move forward. So these are the kinds of legal questions that are involved. But I think the bottom line is that we all have to be concerned about is that if we allow the rights of civilians, whether they're protesters or they're civilians in homes during times of conflict, to be completely disregarded, those are our rights that will be lost as well. And any of us who find ourselves in situations like that will be under the same threats. I think that the decision creates a situation of impunity for the military that is ultimately very damaging for military, for the young people that I've seen in Israel who are wearing the uniforms and carrying the guns. I don't think it's helpful to them.
So how would you describe Rachel's legacy in specifically in Gaza or among the Palestinians?
It's the love, really, that our family feels from Palestinians is very moving to us. In the beginning, it took me a while to really understand how much it meant to Palestinians worldwide that she had gone there, that she had taken the stand that she did, and that her life was taken from her as a result of that. People would come up to me and they would they would burst into tears, and they could hardly speak. And so gradually I came to understand how intensely this is felt. For our family, it means that we've been embraced by the Palestinian people and really by all people who support human rights for people everywhere.
That was Cindy Corey, mother of Rachel Corey, killed by an Israeli bulldozer in March 2003. Find links to the Rachel Corey Foundation for Peace and Justice and related information by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.
Afghanistan, 12th of October. The British military has arrested 7 Royal Marines on suspicion of murder. The British military states this arrest concerns a 2011 engagement with a single insurgent and no civilians involved. Pakistan, 11th of October. Another U.S. drone strike killed 16 people alleged to be fighters associated with Hafiz Gulbahar of North Waziristan. Yemen, 11th of October. Suspected al-Qaeda gunman killed a Yemeni man who worked at the U.S. embassy. On top of all else, U.S. Special Forces are back in Iraq on an unspecified anti-terrorism mission with more U.S. troops scheduled to deploy to Iraq as trainers. Mission accomplished? I don't think so. Mr. Barack Obama, this just goes on and on. Now's the time to withdraw U.S. forces from the entire Middle East. Bring all the troops home today. Over the weekend of October 6th to the 7th, the anniversary of the start of the war in Afghanistan, about 35 members of Code Pink participated in a demonstration of thousands of people in Pakistan against the deadly U.S. drone strikes. Here's what Medea Benjamin and other members of Code Pink said on CNN from Pakistan.
We've been to an area where they have not seen Americans for 10 years, and all they know of America are planes that fly over their heads, sometimes 24 hours a day, terrorizing them, especially the children who go to sleep at night, not knowing if they will wake up alive the next day. And so to have a group of Americans come there with open arms to say that we want to live in peace with you, that's a wonderful thing for our national security.
Activists say the drone strikes that target militants in the region are illegal assassinations in sovereign countries where the U.S. is not at war. They also say drones kill too many civilians and fuel hatred.
We are creating our own enemies, obviously, and this is one of the best tools for recruitment for the bad guys. Okay. Isn't that obvious? They are immoral, they are illegal, and against a national rule of law and the U.S. rule of law.
On Sunday, the second day of the protests, a motorcade of over 100 vehicles set out from the town of Tank for the autonomous tribal area, but the Pakistani government blocked the de facto border with shipping containers and security forces and wouldn't let anyone pass. Probably this is because the autonomous tribal areas are places the Pakistani government doesn't go, the U.S. military doesn't go, and only American drones go. Maybe they were afraid members of Code Pink would be killed in a U.S. drone strike? Meanwhile, Democracy Now, as part of their coverage, carried the words and translation. Meanwhile, Democracy Now! Carried the words of Pakistani political leader and protest organizer Imran Khan on the drone strikes.
These drone attacks are a violation of international law. These drone attacks are a violation of the human rights of the Pakistani people. Do we all condemn them? We want to send a message to America. The more drone attacks you carry out, the more the people will grow to hate you and raise their arms against you. Our tribal people will not be scared off with drone attacks.
According to Democracy Now!, there were also 10 people arrested in a solidarity protest outside a U.S. military base in New York. This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. On the 6th of October, on the 11th anniversary of the start of the U.S. war in Afghanistan, American soldier Micah Turner announced publicly that he was defecting from the U.S. military because of the war in Afghanistan. Sometime before his public appearance, he gave this interview to WSQT Radio.
So you say you went AWOL from the U.S. military because of the wars?
That's right. I was in Afghanistan when Bin Laden was killed, and a lot of really good men died that year. I just feel like betrayed by our government, that all the veterans have been betrayed by their government. Even if we were justified in the beginning, there's no reason for us to be at war now.
On the 6th of October, when Micah Turner publicly revealed himself on Freedom Plaza, he spoke to Occupy DC and a number of reporters.
My name is Micah Turner, Sergeant, E5. U.S. Army.
Assigned where?
What was that?
Where are you assigned?
I'm assigned to 9th MIS, Military Information Support Operations Battalion, Airborne Bravo Company, of 5 sects of 8th MIS, Military Information Support Operations Group, Task Force Battalion.
Is there anything that you would want to say to those who are overseas as well, on active duty, who might be thinking about taking a step themselves?
I would say, first off, I feel your pain. While you're there, keep your head down, keep your eyes sharp, protect the brothers on your left and right, even if that means doing what you have to do. And I'm sorry to say, but that's just the simple reality. When you get home, speak up. You're not supposed to have a voice, but you have more of a voice because you're not supposed to. They will arrest us.
The military does take you into the custody. How could the viewers support you financially and solidarity, show a lot of support? Because legal,
right,
just legal fees, so on and so forth.
If they want to support me while I was in jail, I'd say the best place to go to that is my new Facebook page. Do you remember that?
Probably the best thing is a Twitter account.
Twitter.
We'll make sure to keep that going. It's Unoccupier.
Unoccupier.
Yeah. UNOCCIPIER.
Unoccupier, just like it's pronounced.
Right, and that's in reference to the United States occupation of other countries. I think it's perfectly fine for us to try and occupy the government just so that our voices can be heard. Because our voices need to be heard. We have something important to say. There's too much corruption. Any corruption is too much corruption. You know what? As long as politicians take millions of dollars to be elected, as long as it takes millions of dollars to be a politician, politicians can only represent the interests of millionaires and not the interests of the people. The system is broken, and we're the only ones that can fix it. It's our duty to dissent.
It's our duty to dissent.
How much...
an occupier on Twitter.
If only 10% of the people vote...
Can't just put it up.
The money that's involved in elections is overwhelming if it's only 10%. How much of a responsibility is it for the other 90% to get out there and register? Because it dilutes the money.
Well,
so
I was...
Do the people bear any responsibility for not actually being active and voting? Wouldn't that dilute the amount of money coming in, and you'd have to spend it all over the country like crazy if every single person voted?
Right now there's a lot of talks about not voting because no one is worthy of their vote. I totally understand and agree with that. But not voting isn't going to make a point. If anything, please go to the voting booths on that day, make a box that says no one. Cross it out and take a picture and put it on Facebook. All right? There's no way to count your non-vote if you just stay at home. Do it anyway. Make your vote count. Just make it for no one, because there's no politician right now that represents our interests as the people.
Do you belong to a party? Is there somebody that we could vote for?
Like I said before, as long as it takes millions of dollars to be a politician, politicians can only represent the interests of millionaires and not the interests of the people.
What about on the local level?
for any soldier that feels like there's no hope right now because they're in garrison and they've been scarred, the number to call is 1-800-273-8255. Again, 1-800-273-8255. And know that besides that number, besides those people that will be on the other side of your telephone, there are people here in the streets in every city across the world that support you.
Occupy
is a worldwide movement.
Occupy can support you. If you're out there thinking that you are nuts, you know, that you're alone and you're wondering how you can ever make it through, please come talk to us. Come talk to us. We're out there.
Immediately after this speech, Micah was escorted off of Freedom Plaza by a security detail of Occupy protesters and veterans. The following day, he spoke at an anti-war protest in New York City. On the evening of the 7th of October, he attempted to turn himself in at Fort Hamilton, but was told to come back the following day because it was night.
Called up on him, and he's not technically classified as a deserter yet. Mm-hmm. Or, what do you call it?
AWOL.
So he's going to be granted what they call, it's a Form 460.
Okay.
Which is a promise to return in the morning, which he said he would do. So he's going to go with you folks. We just got to bring him down.
Should we follow you?
Yeah, you can follow me, but you may not sign the bill now.
Okay, sure.
Boyfriend, he'll be released.
On the 8th of October, he tried to surrender again at Fort Hamilton and was turned away by MPs at the gate. For the second day in a row, saying that because it was Columbus Day, better known as Indigenous Solidarity Day, all the detectives had taken the day off. Lawyers told him later that this refusal to accept his surrender restarts the clock on his AWOL status at day one. As of the 9th of October, Micah Turner, disgusted with the refusal of the military to accept his surrender, has gone on the road and underground so they cannot turn around and arrest him at a time of their choosing. Here is U.S. Army defector Micah Turner's Titans Rising rap piece from a CD that he distributed on Freedom Plaza on the day that he publicly announced his defection from the U.S. military to protest the wars in Afghanistan and elsewhere.
This is the beginning, it's the Titans rise. May justice find those eluding reprise. May my sight see not just the no but the why. May my promise to you be Zeus's demise. Best rapper alive, were you even surprised? I admit, I doubted, then I realized a rapper's just a poet through open eyes. And that's MT without disguise. Best rapper alive, I had to say it twice. This is the truth, not just a device. Because bullets win battles, but words win wars. Did you forget that I've got much more? I'm the new Dane's flag like the government's dad. A propaganda master with a brand new tag. The people must speak, remove the gag. I'll fill you in, it's not all bad.
Controlling you like a bunch of sheep. Taking in your thoughts while you sleep. An information overload you to dream of our commercial on the TV screen. The newest thing, the latest ring. The good news is you too can't sing. I will not bow down, I will not conform. I will not accept the so-called norm.
My will is my soul, and it can't be sold. I'm holding all the cards, and I will not fold. Will of a champion and a heart too bold. Yes, life's too short, no I won't die old. Undercover hippie, peace sign flying high. Now I'm marching with my people, how will they reply? Cause they really do own me, that's no lie. But keeping quiet is how evil thrives. Unique from my fingertip to my face. And that is the truth for every case. It's not just to say we each have a sway. It's a rhythm that rocks us every day. Innovation, that's the fruit of the soul. It's a force like fire consuming the fold. Like a message decrypted was written in code. And the meaning was lost along the road. The slave got a lot of nerve, you really talking back? Well, I have the courage that others lack. I will not back down and I won't obey. I won't be called your slave.
So everybody's aware, like, the police are already down there. Walmart is, you know, it kind of shows that Walmart doesn't want to, you know, doesn't want to listen to the voices of workers, but we're going to go make our voices heard anyways. And we're going to do it in a peaceful manner.
So the 10th of October, a strike at Walmart widened to 12 states and 28 stores, with workers threatening to walk out of Walmart on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. It was a Walmart in Laurel, Maryland, where striking employees were joined by activists seeking to keep Walmart out of Washington, D.C.
Victory, I told Walmart, get it easy, mine. Victory today is mine.
Good morning. We come in peace, guys. We don't mean no hard feelings. We come in peace.
All of the associates, I am not working today to protest Walmart's attempts to silence and retaliation against associates. We have spoken out about things like Walmart's low take-home pay, unpredictable work schedules, and unaffordable health care benefits. I believe in a better Walmart, and that attempting to silence and retaliate against associates who want to make Walmart a better place to work takes the company in the wrong direction. For this reason, I am joining with other associates who are not working to demand an end to Walmart's attempts to silence and retaliation against associates who speak out across the country. So that's why we're here today.
We are the workers,
the hard working workers,
the hard working workers,
fighting for our rights,
fighting for our rights.
No more discrimination,
no more discrimination,
no more harassment,
no more harassment.
We are the workers,
we are the workers,
the mighty good workers,
the mighty good workers.
Part of the action in Laurel, striking Walmart associates marched on the store and presented their demands to management.
Hear that? He said, Frank said he will not retaliate against any of us when we return to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Woo. Woo. Good job, Frank.
That's right, Frank, and that's right, all you other Walmart managers. Walmart associates are going to be holding you accountable to that promise. If you don't do right by your workers, there's going to be another walkout on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. And if you're thinking about going to Walmart on the day after Thanksgiving to buy something, think again. There might be long lines, there might be shortages, there might be picket lines outside the store. Walmart employees have formed a new organization named Our Walmart, which started out with just 100 Walmart workers, now has thousands of associates at hundreds of stores in 43 states.
Is or Snoopy is over?
Here are the latest updates from the blockade of construction of the southern leg of the Keystone XL tar sands oil pipeline in Texas. On the 12th of October, TransCanada began resurveying their easement for the Keystone XL pipeline directly through the area where they cannot cut trees due to the tree sitters. This is after weeks of clear cutting outside their assigned easement. The Fuel Fix column of the Houston Chronicle had this to say about the illegal attempt to bypass the blockade. Quote, TransCanada has been thwarted by the demonstrators in recent weeks, so the company decided to move around what the protesters called their tree village with a slight diversion of its previously planned pipeline route. In other words, they will attempt to build the Keystone XL around the protests? On the 11th of October, a man named Kevin climbed up a tree in West End Nature Preserve outside Mount Vernon, Texas, far from the main blockade, to shut down Keystone XL construction in another location. At 9:30 a.m. local time, police had the nerve to accuse him of threatening a waterway and of being a terrorist for having the nerve to block construction that would surely do severe damage to that same waterway. They threatened to climb the tree to remove Kevin by force, but were unwilling or unable to do so. By 11 a.m., the police had abandoned the scene and escorted away supporting blockaders on the ground. TransCanada's machines were then heard in the area, raising concerns of violence. Three cops then returned to the base of Kevin's tree and the situation stabilized. On the 9th of October, two freelance journalists were arrested for reporting on the main tree sit blockade in Winnsboro, Texas. They were released, but cops denied all other journalists access to the area. These reports are now coming directly from the activists in the tree sit or supporting the tree sit, as nobody but activists, the cops, and TransCanada can now approach the area. Also on the 9th of October, one of the blockaders at the main tree sit managed to rotate out from the platforms after 8 days in the trees, evade all the police, and escape the area. He is now working to recruit more activists and is telling his story. He was able to exploit the commotion caused by the arrests of the two freelance journalists to escape the constant surveillance by both police and TransCanada. On the 8th of October, one of the tree sitters recorded video of TransCanada's workers cutting trees just 20 feet from a tree sitter's platform. Here's the emergency radio call recorded by that video.
It's cutting trees that are probably like 20 feet from me, and maybe now 30 feet. Over.
TransCanada, you are as reckless with the future of our entire planet as you were with the safety of those tree sitters. You are a disgrace to your whole country. When I think of Canada, I think of tar sands. I think of the poisoning of Lakota children by the existing Alberta tar sands mines. And I think of the five times as much carbon dioxide per barrel of oil your product is responsible for. TransCanada, you might think you can build the pipeline in a U-bend around one tree sit blockade, but you should expect that these blockades will spread and spread. People will fight you tooth and nail for every inch of the pipeline route. We ravage the world that we love, and the millions trying to be saved. Our endless maniacal appetite left us with another way to die. It's just another way to die. Oh, can we repent and die? It's just another way to die.
Her
is a corporate parent of Beckman Coulter, a supplier of laboratory equipment to puppy-killing Huntington Life Sciences, or HLS. HLS has been caught in seven separate undercover investigations, doing things like punching beagle puppies in the face and dissecting live monkeys without painkillers. Not liking the resulting public outrage, Beckman Coulter has spent more money suing Los Angeles area animal rights activists than the $85,000 value of their contract, seeking an injunction that won't work. Because of this, animal rights activists in other places like D.C. are now protesting Beckman Coulter's corporate parent Danaher, like in a pair of protests on the 10th of October in D.C.
For the cat and for the mouse! For the primate, for the mouse!
We are coming to your house!
For the primate, for the mouse!
We are coming to your house!
Jonathan Graham, for the primate, for the mouse!
We are coming to your house!
That's right, Danaher. The fun doesn't stop at the office when you deal with Huntington Life Sciences. Protests also come to the homes of senior executives like Jonathan Graham, whose home has been protested before.
We've been exposed over seven separate undercover investigations from punching 4 month-old female puppies in the face and 75 primates and mutilating rabbits from the highest tier. Jonathan Graham, Clarence Pope, you are all responsible for the death and suffering of 500 animals each and every day. Right now, there are over 70,000 animals trapped inside the HLS hellhole. You are directly supporting the U.S. supplying and giving money to. This is inexcusable, Danaher. Animals die today!
Danaher, if you blame!
500 animals suffered in pain!
Danaher, if you blame!
500 animals died today!
Danaher, if you blame!
Cops showed up, only to find they had no legal authority to do anything that could drive off the protesters.
We don't need a protest.
That's what you should do. Okay? You have a right to protest. You cannot block the sidewalk. You have to shoot like that.
Not blocking the sidewalk? How are we blocking the sidewalk? There's only three of us. Look at the size of the sidewalk.
How are we blocking the sidewalk, dude?
You're blocking the camera.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Can't block nobody's passage.
Yep. We know that.
Yep. All right. That's basically you can't go in the building.
Yeah.
Can't block nobody's passage going in the building.
Nope.
We're not. We haven't. We've been here for a while. Y'all are late.
They didn't accuse you of doing that. Yeah, yeah. Let you know.
Primates and mutilated primates are the highest bidder. And Danaher Corporation supplies laboratory equipment and a cowhole. We are here demanding that Danaher Corporation cut all ties with Huntington Life Sciences. Did the Danaher Corporation issue an official statement vowing to never do business with them again? Danaher Corporation, Lawrence Culp, Jonathan Graham, and Barry Simple. Drop your ties with Huntington Life Sciences, issue an official statement vowing to never do business with them again, and we'll go away. That is a promise that you can take to the bank, Danaher.
But since Danaher hasn't dropped Huntington Life Sciences yet, protesters were back just a few hours later at lunchtime.
You must, and you will understand!
Their blood! Their blood is on your hands!
Danaher Corporation, you must!
While cops were hassling protesters the second time around, a bystander ran up and spit on Danaher's office. This was not videotaped in order to protect the bystander.
The high-profile international campaign against human trafficking, where girls are forced into prostitution, is increasingly becoming an American issue. Hollywood celebrities Ashton Kutcher and Demi Moore recently launched the Real Men Don't Buy Girls campaign, complete with slick social media appeals, with the goal of raising awareness about child sex slavery in the U.S. The celebrity-driven campaign claims that between 1 and 300,000 children are trafficked annually in the U.S. for sex. But those numbers, taken from a University of Pennsylvania study, have been found to be a gross exaggeration. The U.S. government estimates sex trafficking victims to be in the tens of thousands, but even those numbers have been criticized as unfounded and far too high. Critics say the celebrity-driven campaign and its supporters, such as New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof, distort the issue and divert funds from tracking cases of forced labor and kidnapping experienced by domestic and farm workers in the U.S. Some critics charge that the campaign against trafficking appears to have more in common with a middle-class moral crusade against prostitution. Trafficking, narrowly defined, involves girls and women who are enslaved and transported to another country to work in a brothel. The U.S. law on trafficking is much broader, asserting that all minors induced by force, fraud, or coercion to be involved in a commercial sex act shall be treated by the government as a victim of human trafficking.